This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 27th of April, 2021. I have a full program here today, so let's dive into it. U.S. stocks managing to close to a new all-time high in the case of the S&P 500. Which you can, of course, see on our slide two, or if I pull up an S&P 500 chart, just amazing continued momentum. I was looking back at, I've talked a little bit about divergent momentum, and that's just something that pops up time and time again when you have a rally like this. So it's not really a valuable signal. What you really need to see is a sell-off and the creation of a pivot that we then follow through lower. And we're so far from doing that if we use the 21-day moving average, even as a sort of basic, place to just establish a pivot below. It's only happened twice in the last year that we've established a pivot of a higher order, meaning a few days of price action before and after that that were above that low. And that happened last September and in March. And both times those were very quickly erased, those new lows. So really, I guess it's the earnings season, Peter, to a large degree. Also the fact that the Treasury yield rise failed to sort of continue to press and cause concern. Is that what's you think the key driver here?
Well, I think the equity market right now is in a positive momentum again, and it's the earnings season is off to a strong start. And I've hinted at this for a couple of times, but especially Europe, I think looking very interestingly. We know the U.S. companies in general have higher quality in terms of earnings deliverance than European earnings. So the very strong earnings that we're seeing. If you look at slide three, you can see I've put in some different bullets here. So we have beats across the board from HSBC, very strong result as well from DSV, the logistic companies. Maersk is doubling its fiscal outlook on very strong container freight rates. UBS is beating as well, and that's despite almost an $800 million hit from the Archegos collapse. You have BP, the CEO was just on Bloomberg TV, very positive there. They are initiating share buybacks and looking very strong. Novartis is in line with this estimate. So it's just across the board, it looks quite good on earnings. And even more importantly, as I said, we are in this phase where the forward estimates have actually been quite too conservative across the board. So all these companies can deliver. And I think in the last two sessions, what you have seen, and you saw it yesterday as well, put in on slide three, the small insert with our different theme baskets. You've seen this outperformance from our crypto basket, our next gen medicine basket, bubble stocks, batteries, India and green transformation. So basically those six baskets that really represent, the growth and the aggressive growth, also aggressive valuation baskets. So I think that's sort of at least the environment we're back in. And then if we are right about our inflation call and the commodities call, then I think this growth bets will fade a little bit, and we'll go back to be buying pro-cyclical stocks, value stocks, as interest rates go up.
Yeah, you talk about aggressively valued companies. One of those, the biggest of all, perhaps Tesla, reporting last night. We'll get to their earnings report itself later, but they're really happy to have in the studio with us today, Mass. You're looking at the crypto space in your time with us, and there's some interesting developments yesterday specifically around Tesla, and you've got an interesting exchange here between, what shall we call him, the Stonks cheerleader, Dave Portnoy, and Musk's and Tesla's decision to liquidate some of its Bitcoin holdings. What's going on here? What's your takeaway on this exchange?
Yeah, exactly. Yesterday, Tesla announced that they have sold around 10% of their Bitcoin holdings back in March. They made slightly above $100 million on that trade. Strange enough is that Elon Musk pointed out yesterday on Twitter that it was essentially to prove liquidity of Bitcoin. I find that reason for selling extremely weird, because as a former crypto trader, I know that you can easily liquidate around $250-300 million worth in Bitcoins. So I really don't buy that argument for selling.
Yeah, and we're going to have a longer conversation with you later, because as some of our longer time listeners might know, at least Peter and I, in any case, have a somewhat skeptical approach to the crypto space and some of our comments. And of course, you being more involved and more deeply knowledgeable in the space as well, I think that'll be a valuable conversation. And we'll put that out, that longer form conversation on the whole crypto space, everything that's going on. and put that on Friday because that's a public holiday here. So that'll have something to entertain our listeners on that off day for us fortunate folks living in the Danish market in any case. But one more comment or development that was very interesting yesterday was this, it's not official, but it's a report that JP Morgan is looking at offering some sort of managed Bitcoin fund to its clients. You have a wonderful sort of a collection of what you're calling the six stages of Bitcoin, attitudes here on slide five. So take us through, what do you think this is saying about the whole space?
Yeah, as a very inexperienced bank, I find this hilarious. It's the first article quoted back in 2015, and then the last one from yesterday. And it's basically JP Morgan, their view on Bitcoin and crypto in general, and how it has basically changed. And I think it really sums up the last 6 months, the last 12 months, that we see all these institutional investors, banks, really tapping into this market.
Yeah, and I wonder, just on my side of things, at least, it's almost like a cover your rear end principle or fear of missing out. You almost have to offer these investments because there's so much requests from your customers. I imagine that's a part of it as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a huge part as well.
Okay. All right, let's move along. There's so much going on, across markets, of course, but also in commodities, where we have a huge move on top of already huge moves in the agricultural space, and we have copper pushing on these close to record highs. Take us through what's going on, Ole, and where the focus is.
Well, the focus is basically threefold. It's a very dry condition in Brazil, currently lifting the price of corn, sugar, and coffee. And it's cold weather in the US, which is delaying the planting process, which is adding a further boost to corn and wheat. Part of the winter crop is also suffering somewhat in terms of their prospective yield. So we are, and this is basically all happening at a time where global stocks are dwindling because Chinese or overseas demand led by China has continued to be very, very strong. So I just put in on slide six, just to give an idea that just one of the ETFs tracking the agricultural space, the DB Agricultural Fund, ticker DBA, you can see how this rally is almost can challenge Bitcoin in its vertical ascent.
Ah, come on.
Nearly. And then on the right-hand side, you can just see the performance of cross agricultural commodities just this past month. Something like soybean oil, corn, Kansas wheat, and Chicago wheat, they're all up around 25%. If we move to the next slide, on the slide seven, you can see how a lot of this focus right now is clearly concentrated at the front of the curve. So the front of the curve in the crop market is basically the old crop. These are the contracts trading for expiry in May and July. These are related to crops that was harvested last year, and also the current crop coming out of South America. With the South American crop now dwindling because of the drought conditions, we're seeing a market getting relatively tight at this time of year. So it all hinges now really on a bumper crop this autumn from Europe and the US and Black Sea. And we really need to keep a close eye on the weather developments. And what it's basically resulting in is a big rise in the so-called backwardation, or the one-year implied carry that you hold to get on holding positions in the grain markets. And you can see the current in carries are very, very elevated, something like bean oil, which is more than 20%. So basically, the gap between current prices and the one-year out is more than 20%. So that's the kind of yield that can be harvested by holding a long position.
There's often the assumption when you get into these crazy bull markets, I guess, that the forward prices are going to drop because eventually there's mean reversion. There'll be some supply coming in.
Yeah,
so I guess that's so key about the North American,
and that's particularly in the crop market because it's so seasonally divided. So you got old crop and new crop coming in. Moving on to another market, which is it's, again, staying on the Bitcoin theme, even very vertical ascent we've got now in copper since the low last March. And I put in a long term chart which basically highlights that we're just a few percent away from the record high from 2011. We saw that momentum break out a couple of weeks ago, the same momentum breakout that happened in gold, which so far has not really yielded any further upside. We also saw a breakout in oil. That one has also failed for now because of the pandemic and outbreaks in India. But copper is racing along momentum, expectation for green transformation driving up demand over the coming years. And it has left the rest of the market just scratching their head a little bit. Also on slide 8, just look at the chart on the right. It's non-scientific, but if you take the copper gold ratio, so basically copper price divided by the gold price, and you add the US Treasury 10-year yields, you can see how the correlation between those are really reasonably firm. So recently we've seen the copper outperform gold. That has also led to a pickup in yield based on the expectations for economic growth to pick up. But right now it's racing away. That basically tells us that potentially that either yields in the US are too low or gold is too low. Which one is going to be, that obviously remains to be seen.
Good stuff. All right. And now speaking of the metal space, one of the currencies really enjoying this, the bid into the metals and also platinum, which has been very elevated, is the South African Rand. Got a little amalgamation of charts on slide 9. You can see the dollar of South African Rand price action is hitting those new recent lows, significant comeback from the highs induced, of course, by the pandemic. And in the small top chart to the right, showing that the credit spreads for South African debt continue to compress, that blue line there showing the spread about 3.5%, so 350 basis points on a dollar denominated South African sovereign bond. That's for a 2041 maturity. And then on the lower right, sourced from the OEC link, you can see there, you can see the mix of prominent metals that have been really helping to support the exports from South Africa. And that is a year-on-year increase from January to January, 167% more iron ore in terms of export volumes or export value, and then 159% on platinum. So just huge growth there. And then rounding out FX, a lot of focus on, for me, on Aussie, and this commodities rally is finally boosting the Aussie and other commodity currencies a bit more yesterday. So very strong performance by the Aussie against all the G3 currencies, dollar, euro, and yen. And really critical levels here, tactically around the 78 level that I've marked in the chart on slide 10. I think a strong close above there, together with a continued decent risk sentiment elsewhere. I'm surprised Aussie hasn't progressed higher. I covered some of the reasons why that may be in my FX update yesterday, because you're not getting good signals from some of the other markets, especially fixed income. But there's the problem of knowing what the quality of the signals are because of the degree of central bank intervention. So I think we're at a sort of a tipping point there, one way or another, in coming days, of course, with the FOMC up tomorrow. A really interesting test sentiment-wise for the whole bubble space and the EV space in particular was Tesla earnings yesterday, Peter, after the close. And it looks like it was slightly down the stock after the close. But take us through where Tesla was relative to expectations and any guidance they had.
Yeah, so I think the stock was down in post market trading because expectations was very high, and there was little news for the bulls to really use as a catalyst to push the stock even higher. But the point is that the revenue was in line with expectation at $10.4 billion for the quarter, up 70% from last year. Earnings per share were 15 to 16% stronger than expected, so they made $0.93 on the dollar, per share, on a non-GAAP basis versus 80 cents expected. And but a little bit more than half of that is actually stock-based compensation. That's a very key point. So Tesla is rewarding a lot of its key employees with a lot of stock-based compensation, and that's obviously an expense for shareholders. So it's very worth having in mind. And then, as you can see on slide 11 here with the charts from the slide deck of Tesla, I mean the business is really accelerating and showing momentum over the past three quarters. So you can see deliveries have gone on a 12-month basis from 400,000 to 600,000, cash flows from operations now at $8 billion, free cash flow at $4 billion. Around half of those $4 billion in free cash flow is from regulatory credits. So you have to sort of dilute that amount a little bit. The company expects 50% year-on-year growth in deliveries, which potentially is the angle why investors sold off, because the current consensus estimate is for revenue to be up 58% year-on-year. And that means that if you take the deliveries and you go from deliveries to the revenue increase, which is 8 percentage points higher, you need the average selling price to go up, but actually the average selling price were down 13% year over year, and that's potentially the Achilles heel here and why the stock sold off. They expect production to start in Berlin very soon here in 2021. They made a key strategic change to their solar business, which I find quite interesting. So they've been selling power walls there. Home batteries and their solar cells on the rooftops separately, but now they will be bundling them together. They're forcing this decentralized energy model, and I've always, you know, for maybe since I was in high school, I've always thought about this decentralized energy idea. I think it's super interesting because you know, the way the grid works today is that you have these massive power plants and then you have huge transmission lines, etc. But you could I think the overall grid would be much more robust if it was decentralized in a way, and that's what they're trying to pursue here. And then he talked about Musk, that they have made huge mistakes in the solar roof tiles business that they want to create, and it from my side, I mean, typically you're pretty positive in an earnings release and a conference call, and being so frank about this business, I think between the lines that we are many years away from something that can be produced flexible to the different designs of roofs. Just to give you one example, if you didn't had an old roof with a strong enough structure to support the new solar roof tiles, then you would have to reinforce it, and the cost could actually go up 2 to 3 times from the estimates of Tesla. So there's a lot of things there. And then, as Matt said, they sold 10% of their Bitcoin holdings and created a $100 million gain right there. The valuation is still aggressive, but as I said on our internal call, John, I still think that Tesla will be supported in the short term because it's still the biggest business in EV at scale, and which is a pure play. You cannot get anything like it. So until the other car makers are ramping up their production and becoming more an EV company than an ICE business, I think Tesla will get this premium.
All right. And then if you want to pull out any names from today's Q1 earnings reports that are just rolling in fast and furious all week.
Yeah, if I was to highlight one in today, it was the DSV Palantir. I mean, blowout quarter. The stock is up, I think 7 or 8% all time high. They're buying this new company Agilities from the US, where they're diluting their existing shareholders by 8%. So it's an all share transaction, but they're gaining 23% more revenue, and they can harvest a lot of synergies. I mean, this is a company that is on steroids. They have the right logistics platform for the future, agility, low cost, etc. It's flexible. I think DSV could be the biggest logistics firm in the future. And then the two biggest and most important ones, I think, is after the market closed, Microsoft and Alphabet. Go read my preview from yesterday. And then before the market opens, I think the most interesting stock right there could be General Electric, but I think in particular UPS because of that potential inflation angle there and their expectations for logistic costs going forward.
Yeah, also curious as we open up economies, to what degree there is any sort of a mean reversion back to previous behavior on packages, etc. But that's a separate issue. Let's look at the macro slide briefly today. Basically, as we're talking here, we have the Swedish Riksbank out. I'm not expecting any new developments after they sort of extended their 0% forecast through 2024. But at some point, the scale of the QE is getting a bit absurd relative to how strong the economy is on the manufacturing and housing size. So eventually, there might be some sort of taper announcement, whether it's at this meeting or hints of thereof. Probably not. But in any case, I think the Swedish krona really well positioned here for continued strength, provided a risk sentiment is generally stable. And then we have Hungarian Central Bank, just an interesting one to follow there for the very, very negative real rates in Hungary. 3.5%+ CPI with essentially a zero yield. Good luck retaining value for money on that one. And then Q1 CPI from Australia overnight will be interesting for, again, the Australian dollar situation as highlighted earlier. And then tomorrow, FOMC meeting, a key test there. The FOMC is not going to hint at much. It would just as soon not be meeting. At some point, they're going to have to announce a taper, but this is not the meeting for expecting that. So I don't think that'll be a huge development there. It's been a long one. We'll cut it off there. And we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Hey, Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.